Welcome to SCOTUS Cast, a legislator's vote is not protected speech edition. Thank you for tuning in. On June 13, 2011, the Supreme Court announced its decision in Nevada Commission on Ethics versus Kerrigan. Nevada passed a law that bars a legislator from both voting on a proposal and advocating its passage or failure when he has a conflict of interest. The question in this case was whether this law was unconstitutionally overbroad such that it violated the First Amendment rights of legislators. In an opinion delivered by Justice Scalia, the court held by a vote of 9-0 that the Nevada law was not unconstitutionally overbroad such that it violated the First Amendment rights of legislators. Chief Justice Roberts and Justices Kennedy, Thomas, Ginsburg, Breyer, Sotomayor, and Kagan joined Justice Scalia's opinion. Justice Kennedy filed a concurring opinion. Justice Alito filed an opinion concurring in part and concurring in the judgment. To discuss the case, we have Supreme Court Advocate Eric S. Jaffe. As always, the Federalist Society takes no position on particular legal or public policy issues. All expressions of opinion are those of the speaker. And now, Mr. Jaffe.
Hello, this is Eric Jaffe. I am an attorney in Washington, D.C., and a member of the Federalist Society's Executive Committee for the Free Speech and Election Law Practice Group. I'm here to discuss the Supreme Court's decision yesterday in Nevada Commission on Ethics versus Kerrigan. In my earlier discussion, just after the argument in Nevada Commission on Ethics versus Kerrigan, I noted that the primary argument on which cert had been granted, the question of whether or not a legislator's vote was a speech, was a sufficient form of speech to be protected by the First Amendment, that was not a terribly difficult issue. And that prediction was borne out by the Supreme Court's decision 9-0 to reverse the Nevada Supreme Court's ruling that a legislative vote was protected speech subject to strict scrutiny. In the background of the case, for those of you who may not have followed it before, is that Kerrigan was a legislator who was sanctioned for failing to recuse himself from a legislative vote where his former campaign manager, a volunteer campaign manager, had lobbied the legislature, in this case the council, in connection with that vote. Even though that individual didn't stand to gain anything personally, nor did Kerrigan, the fact that they were close associates in the past and deemed to be friends by virtue of that led the courts to conclude that he should have recused himself and he was sanctioned. The Nevada Supreme Court reversed that sanction, holding that his vote was protected speech and subject to strict scrutiny. The Supreme Court reversed them back and said that no, the Kerrigan's vote on the particular legislative matter was not speech protected by the First Amendment, and consequently, his being sanctioned for failing to recuse himself, it was a mild sanction, a slap on the wrist, but nonetheless, his being sanctioned for failing to recuse himself did not violate the First Amendment. It's not a terribly surprising ruling insofar as it goes, which is to say that the act of voting is not protected by the First Amendment from ordinary recusal rules, which state that a legislator has to recuse themselves when they have some personal interest in a matter. In my earlier discussion, I had pointed out that the real meat of this case was, in fact, not the question presented, which was not so difficult, but was, in fact, the question that was briefed at the Supreme Court by the folks defending Kerrigan, which was whether or not the particular recusal rules in question penalized free association or were unconstitutionally vague, in that they required recusal or seemingly required recusal, and in fact in Kerrigan's case did so, when the relationship between the lobbyist and the legislator was arguably simply one of political association, that the lobbyist had supported the legislator, had volunteered his time on the legislator's campaign, and that would basically be a penalty for political association by forcing the legislator to then recuse himself whenever some supporter comes before him. The court did not reach that issue. And in fact, in a very brief paragraph at the end of the decision noted that the issue of free association and the issue of vagueness were not properly before them at the Supreme Court, having not been raised in the brief in opposition and having not been addressed by the Nevada Supreme Court. The nature, they call it waiver, but in fact, what it seems is simply that it was waived simply for the purposes of this Supreme Court appeal. There's no indication that those issues are not live on remand, particularly given that in one instance, the Nevada Supreme Court explicitly declined to reach one of the issues, finding it unnecessary, though now perhaps it will become necessary in light of the reversal. And the other issue, while apparently briefed below, was not addressed by the Nevada Supreme Court one way or the other. So on remand, the case is much more interesting in that it will raise the far more thorny free association and vagueness issues about this Nevada law. But ultimately, for now at least, the Nevada Supreme Court's decision is reversed. Ultimately, I think that was probably the right decision, though I have reasons to question the reasoning by which the court got there. Before we turn to that, however, it's worth we'll get to that. So what Justice Scalia, writing for the court, did, and in this instance it was 9-0, but two justices concurred, one concurring fully, but writing a separate concurrence to emphasize the open issues that remained, and that was Justice Kennedy, and Justice Alito concurring in part and concurring in the judgment because he disagreed with some of the reasoning of Justice Scalia's main opinion. Now, as to Justice Scalia's main opinion, Justice Scalia basically held that a legislative vote is an act, not speech, and consequently is not subject to the First Amendment at all. He supports this indirectly via the long history of legislative recusal rules, which I think quite correctly suggests that in principle, or at least in the abstract, such rules do not violate the First Amendment, but do not necessarily suggest that legislative voting is not also speech, merely that it is not speech that is protected from such recusal rules. Justice Alito's concurrence, in fact, differs from the majority on precisely this point. While he believes that legislative voting is indeed speech as well as a legislative act, but that given the nature of recusal rules and the history of recusal rules, it is speech that is nonetheless regulable in these particular instances, in these particular circumstances, and hence the restrictions do not violate the First Amendment even while the vote is indeed speech subject to the First Amendment. And I think at the end of the day, that's probably the more sensible analysis. Indeed, while a legislative vote is primarily an act of government and hence not speech in that sense, it is not meaningfully different than many other forms of mixed speech and conduct. In the classic case of United States versus O'Brien, where a dissenting citizen burned their draft card, of course, the burning of a particular governmental document was an act. It was an action, but it was an action that likewise carried communicative effect and was intended to carry communicative effect, whether or not it was also simply the act of lighting something on fire, and hence not speech in the traditional sense. Likewise with a legislative vote, which quite frankly is in many instances speech in the traditional sense of the voter, the legislator saying yay or nay to a particular question, and hence speaking, the fact that it also carries certain legal effect, the effect of potentially making a law, a bill into a law or something of that sort, does not deprive it of its communicative contact. It just means that it can be regulated based on its non-communicative nature. So the regulation imposed by recusal rules, not allowing a legislator to vote on something which they have a bias or some personal interest in, is certainly, in the traditional O'Brien sense, a valid regulation aimed at the non-communicative aspects of a vote. They don't want laws being passed that are not passed fairly and that are passed with some sense of personal bias. And so in that sense, the recusal rules are not directed at speech. They are in general content neutral, viewpoint neutral. They would apply regardless of which way you were planning to vote. They would apply regardless of which side of the vote you were on. And so in that sense, they very much fit within the O'Brien mold of a regulation targeted at non-speech conduct that nonetheless has communicative impact, but that doesn't unduly suppress the communicative nature of that conduct. And here, that's precisely the case. It would have been a much simpler opinion to simply say that under very traditional First Amendment principles and find that the recusal rules in general were perfectly valid under the First Amendment and not subject to any heightened scrutiny, given that they're not viewpoint or content-based. That would have been the O'Brien approach. It would have been quite simple. It would have no doubt gained a majority, and in fact probably greater unanimity than Justice Scalia's approach. The one trouble with Justice Scalia's approach is by denying the vote the label of speech at all, there is meaningfully less protection in those instances where the restrictions are more burdensome or do in fact target the communicative impact as well as or in addition or instead of the non-speech aspects of the behavior. This is not sadly something new for Justice Scalia. On occasion in the past, he has reached out well beyond what was necessary to find something did not violate the First Amendment, generally holding that things are not speech when in fact he could have upheld a regulation on more narrow grounds, recognizing that the behavior in question was subject to the First Amendment, but simply that the regulation satisfied all First Amendment requirements. Examples of this would be Washington Education Association versus Davis, I believe it was, which involved union dues several terms ago, the Livestock Management Marketing Association case, in which Justice Scalia characterized certain conduct as government speech, not subject to the First Amendment at all, rather than compelled support for private speech, which, while subject to the First Amendment, could possibly be defended in a variety of circumstances. And here again, Justice Scalia is taking the less speech-protective approach when more narrow alternatives were available. Somewhat disappointing, though I suppose given the past cases, not terribly surprising, and certainly given Justice Scalia's extreme hostility during oral argument, not really surprising at all that he would slap this down in as forceful a fashion as possible. Fortunately, Justice Kennedy, while concurring in the majority opinion, went to great pains to note that the associational claims raised by Kerrigan, though not properly before the court in this particular petition, were nonetheless valid and, in fact, extremely troubling challenges to the recusal law in particular and the way it was applied in this case, and noting that to the extent that recusal rules are used to penalize political association, the First Amendment questions are very different and, in fact, do not even turn on whether or not a legislator's vote is speech, but turn on whether recusing a legislator from a vote is a penalty for political association. Likewise, the particulars of Nevada's recusal rule were so open-ended and broad that there's ample room to argue that it was unduly vague, particularly insofar as it might impinge upon things like free association. So with those caveats, the decision, I think, in its result was plainly right. A little disappointing that they didn't reach the additional two arguments, which I think they could have reached, but they certainly do not seem to have foreclosed those arguments on remand. So no harm, no foul there, other than the need to continue with litigation. And overall, not bad. Sort of, once again, as I've said in the past about some other decisions, right answer for less than the best reason available, but not necessarily the wrong reason, but certainly a less satisfying and less doctrinally coherent reason than had Justice Scalia simply stuck to the O'Brien line of cases and disposed of the case on those grounds. So there you have it, Nevada Commission on Ethics versus Kerrigan. Nevada Supreme Court's reversed, with the ultimate conclusion being that a legislator's vote is not protected speech under the First Amendment. Thank you, and thanks again to the Federal Society for asking me to do this podcast and revisit my post-argument recap of this case. Thank you.
Thank you for listening to this episode of SCOTUS Cast. For more episodes of SCOTUS Cast, as well as audio and video of past Federalist Society events, please visit our website at www.federalistsociety.org/multimedia.